some of these trace minerals, man, they're tied into everything that we do. They're in performance, they're in immunity, growth, health. It's crazy. So when you go back and look at those, if I go out and speak to a producer and they're like, man, it's just been dry. We haven't seen the production numbers that we've been wanting to see, or reproduction of my cows is not going great. Then I really try to dig into, okay, you know, what's your water source? What have you been feeding? Now the big one when it comes to drought now is, when was last time you had grass? What kind of mineral are you putting out? That's big, because we're dealing with this heat stress in some of these places on cattle that are most likely or possibly deficient in some of our trace minerals, vitamins even, because of what we're seeing.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Mullenix, and today I have Dr. Remy Wyatt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, Remy, just to start everyone off, you are a independent consultant for Great Plains Livestock Consulting Group. You got a PhD from Iowa State, a master's degree from Texas Tech, a lot of feedlot, trace mineral focus, research focus. Just give everyone kind of your background of how you got where you are today. I know you had some opportunities after your PhD to get in academia. You know, you went to the other side of industry. And so for the audience, just kind of give that spill of how you got where you are.
Yeah, so I grew up in actually Texas and Kentucky. My father managed a couple of purebred limousine cattle operations, especially in Kentucky, which got us really involved in the heifer show side. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I've loved cattle, loved heifers, loved everything about it. So ended up going to WT for my undergrad in animal science and got hooked up with Dr. Ty Lawrence there. Started working in the meat lab, did a little bit of meats judging. Really enjoyed that side because it was a facet of the industry that I had never been introduced to before. So we were in the plant all the time, in and out, and from there, decided to go to Texas Tech, work on my meats degree with Dr. Mark Miller. And by the end, I missed live cattle and talked to a few people and ended up at Iowa State with Dr. Stephanie Hansen, working on trace minerals. So kind of a roundabout, but I got an interesting view of both sides.
I think, you know, especially from the feedlot standpoint, that's a great combination to have, is understanding both the live animal feeding side, but also what happens to that carcass and mm-hmm. you know, how to feed them for the optimal carcass.
I agree. It's been cool to know both sides, so you can look at some of the physiology and feeding and maybe help fill in the blanks for some of these producers.
And so now you serve as a consultant. So your clientele base, is it primarily cow-calf, feedlot, backgrounding, small lots, larger lots, et cetera?
Currently, I'm located north of Dallas, South Wichita Falls, which leaves me in the area of a lot of backgrounding cattle. Also, you know, a lot of smaller producers, they work with mills. So the majority of my work is dealing with those small backgrounding guys or larger backgrounding guys that just need some direction with keeping those calves healthy before they send them to a large feedlot. So I deal a lot with that. You know, my kind of, not my focus, but a big majority of my recommendations come down to the trace mineral side, maybe why we're seeing some issues with production or health in some cases for them. So I've really enjoyed it. I don't work as much on the finishing side, maybe one day, but I like using my knowledge to help these guys produce the best they can. So
if for any students that are listening, and since you just got back from PNC, and that's very student-oriented and student-based, is, you know, think about your time as a grad student and now as a consultant. What, any recommendations for students that may be interested in not necessarily academia, but want to get a PhD and get into the industry?
I think, you know, there's a couple things that I recommend. One is getting to know people, because I have ran into people. I use those connections all the time, especially to ask questions. A lot of the people that I knew getting into a PhD program went somewhere else or got a different expertise from another school. So knowing those, but also pick something you're interested in. There aren't a lot of places that really focus, like Iowa State did, on trace minerals or vitamins. It's something that you don't learn in depth about a lot. So that the way I learned, it was very interesting to me, and I really enjoyed getting to know that. So I think if you want to make your PhD something that you can carry forward and be happy with, then that's the route to go with.
All right, so let's move in the topic at hand, since you brought up trace minerals, and you know, that's a big part of ruminant nutrition, is understanding trace minerals and understanding those requirements, especially through drought, etc. And so, you know, let's just start talking about, you know, your interest and why you had an interest in trace minerals and how to use that today in a lot of your consulting.
I've always been a really detailed person. I like to know how things work. And I'm sure you've talked to Dr. Hansen before. You know, she makes a good point that some of these trace minerals, man, they're tied into everything that we do. They're in performance, they're in immunity, growth, health. It's crazy. So when you go back and look at those, if I go out and speak to a producer and they're like, man, it's just been dry, we haven't seen the production numbers that we've been wanting to see, or reproduction of my cows is not going great, then I really try to dig into, okay, you know, what's your water source? What have you been feeding? Now, the big one when it comes to drought now is, when was the last time you had grass? What kind of mineral are you putting out? That's big, because we're dealing with this heat stress in some of these places on cattle that are most likely or possibly deficient in some of our trace minerals, vitamins even, because of what we're seeing. So I'll kind of dive into that a little bit. So I'm originally from Midland. My high school years were spent there, and it's pretty dry. It's pretty hot. And over the course of that, we deal with real gypy water, which by gypy, I mean gypsum water. So high calcium, high sulfur. The more that we see our water supplies dry, the more we're seeing an increased concentration of water sources of copper and sulfur. Now, normally, you know, before we had some of these ingredients that we feed, like distillers in our mixed rations or cubes, the interesting one I run into is that you've had guys who feed cotton seed cubes most of their life, and they've been good with that, possibly have trace minerals, that have now switched to a distiller's cube with a higher sulfur content, and didn't realize that was a thing for distillers. So they've got cattle that have probably adapted to a typical high calcium, high sulfur water source here. And then you have that added on to, and starting to see issues with some of these guys with polyoencephalomalacia. So either because of a thiamine deficiency, or one that you know, they weren't aware that they needed, or sulfur toxicity. And then along with that comes your copper deficiency due to higher sulfur in the diet. So in a little bit of background on that is, when you get higher sulfur coupled with molybdenum in your feed sources, it will bind copper, get stuck in the enterocyte in the small intestine or in the intestine, and then be sloughed off and never absorbed. So some guys dealing with, you know, if I can go, one of the most visual signs of copper deficiency is a dull coat. or like if you have black cattle, they have brown hair, you know, something's a little off there or could be. So could lead to unthriftiness, anemia, poor growth, those sorts of things. So that's one. Calcium, of course, in our area of the world, people already do formulate for with a little bit higher phosphorus mineral. So, and by the way, stop me if you have any questions. And then another that I've really been thinking about lately is, you know, vitamin A. People kind of go back and forth on what we need to do on that. But we've got areas down here where they haven't gotten an adequate amount of rain in years. And I know that some of our Midwest counterparts are kind of experiencing that right now with small rainfall. But, you know, down you get to San Antonio, San Angelo, some of those areas, they haven't gotten enough. So they don't have enough green forage, which for me equates to, it's not only, you know, feed, but it's also a source of vitamin A and E. And now with prices a little bit tighter, with what we've got going on with the economy, you know, that fire this past year, the vitamin A plant, those are things that we really need to take into consideration. You know, if you've got green grass, your typical vitamin mineral pack is probably going to do it. But once we get into these cattle that are most likely depleted in those sources, really need to look at a different sort of plan for them. So if that means increasing fortification in their mineral or working on something like that with producers, I think that's very relevant.
So I think you touched on something that's very important that a lot of producers take for granted. And we talk about mineral content in forages a lot. And what we don't hear a lot is mineral content in water. And that's when distillers got very popular back in the, you know, early 2000s, again, that was feeding at a high rate. You get in some of these areas, especially in Western United States, that do have sulfur issues. And you did see a lot of polio of, you know, feeding a higher rate to distillers, higher sulfur, and a lot of polio issues in these backyard lots, even on the cow-calf side. And so working with your producers, what do you tell them about how to sample water, how often sample their water to understand some of those dynamics that they just didn't think about?
I think when I work with these guys now, honestly, any time during the year, I think is a good time after a year or two of drought to sample, see where you're at. If you've been through a few months, your tank's still full, what we call tank, your pond, anything like that. If it's still pretty full, I mean, you're still probably decent. But if you're about halfway, and in some cases, if you're at a quarter of where you were, it's a good time to sample and check and see, because, you know, even if you have some runoff that's caught in that pond from other sources, I think it's very likely that you were having a higher concentration of minerals in those areas that you may not have thought about before. Maybe in a good tank any other time, and still is. So typically, though, I would maybe look at probably winter versus summer, just depending on your rainfall. But if I were to go practical, I'd say monitor your tank level, pond level.
And location and water source, I think, is also important, too, is because you run in those instances that within a mile of your ranch, you may have a different water type source, and it could be high in iron or high in sulfur, and the other locations may not. And so understanding that is very important, because it's not a one size fits all of just this water. You know, just because you're testing one water source doesn't mean it fits everything.
Yeah. Like I've talked to guys, you know, around my area, and I'll be like, how's your water? And they're like, oh, it's pretty hard, you know, or out in West Texas, same thing. And then you go an hour somewhere else and they're like, oh, it's great. Now, if it is really, we don't know until we test it, but they've never had an issue. So are never been able to tease out if the water part is an issue.
Right. And so distillers did that to a lot of guys. If they didn't think they had an issue. And, you know, some of those areas, like you were talking about earlier, you can really smell that sulfur. And it's pretty pronounced that we have sulfur issues, right?
Yeah.
But some areas it's not.
Yep, I agree. I mean, you go on visits out to New Mexico side and you can really smell it there. And in Midland, yeah, you can definitely smell it. Right. In some cases, you know, like central North Texas, it's not as prominent, but they may still be dealing with that increased concentration as well as the distiller's cube or feed. So.
And then you touched on vitamin A, and I think that's a very hot topic right now of questioning what is the true vitamin A requirement, and was the requirement that was set so long ago, was those samples collected properly and analyzed properly to get that basis, right? And so where are we at with our recommendations or with your recommendations on vitamin A?
You know, they talked about this a little bit at Plains Nutrition Conference as well. Dr. Terry Engel from Colorado State touched on it because it is a hot topic. It's expensive. And depending on where it's coming from, it may be getting a little more expensive. Part of it's up in the air. You know, we thought there was more research on like stability of vitamin A in mineral sources. And maybe it's one of those that everybody thinks everybody else is doing it. I'm not sure, but it seems like they didn't see anything in their search of sources to say anything about there being an issue with our stability. Like our protective methods right now that we use to keep them viable seem to be working well, or at least that's what we hear. For the recommendation, that one's interesting because I know that our company did a little bit of work with the University of Nebraska looking at some supplementation, and part of it, especially in like mature cows, shows that and I cannot recall that number right now, but at the level that they were supplementing that was higher than what we currently were using was enough to basically keep their liver vitamin A consistent. It didn't actually raise it at all. So if we've got deficient cattle, does that mean if we've got vitamin A deficient cows and we bring them in and we feed the recommendation, are we just keeping it consistent or are we building the supply, right? And vitamins are kind of tough because, you know, if you do a necropsy or take samples, depending on your scale for measurement, that analysis could be different. And it's expensive. It's very expensive. So working on that's interesting, and we need to know that requirement in our mature cows. We need to know it in our heifers, you know, in our background in growing, feeding animals. We do. So I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on that side. Personally,
especially with, you know, you're talking about the drought scenarios that, you know, New Mexico, Texas is in, Nebraska and a lot of Midwest is experiencing is you think that that green grass in the summer is going to replenish what she may have lost over winter, right? And that may or may not be the case. But if we don't get grain up, we don't get rain, you know, we run into those circumstances of she's already depleted. She just get calved a calf that was depleted. And what does that do to that calf once it gets to the feedlot? Because it may not have adequate storage by time it's weaned and gets into a backgrounding or feedlot.
Yeah, and ready to roll, depending on management practices of whoever buys that calf to turn them out onto wheat or grass. They may or may not have green forage and moving that way. So one of the things they touched on was our vitamin stores last about 2 to 3 months without supplementation because, well, at least the good thing is that it's a fat soluble vitamin. So its storage is a little bit better than some of those others or some of our trace minerals that kind of pass through, like say vitamin C or zinc, where you need a constant supply. So You kind of don't know what your status is. I know that the couple guys that I've worked with have looked at implementing an injectable vitamin A or E for when they bring calves in the lot, which honestly I think is smart if it's cost effective. Because vitamin E is another one too. You know, we get a lot from green forage, also fat soluble, but both of those deal very heavily with immune capacity in these younger calves and recycle each other. So I think right now, I don't think it's a Band-Aid or recommendation. I think it can be fine-tuned just like any other recommendation that we have.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of these injectables are somewhat of a Band-Aid for a lot of producers because they don't have a good mineral program. But in the instance that you're talking about is these calves are coming in with short supply. And that initial boost may help them jump start into that performance and not fall behind, even though they're about to get hopefully a balanced, you know, diet. But it may help some of these calves in a highly stressed time of being able to perform.
I agree. And I think that the other downside, you know, the good side of the being a fat soluble vitamin is that we do get 2 to 3 months where we have a supply to draw from. The downside is that it takes a little bit of time to build that back up. So maybe that's where you bring that injectable in. If you've got a history of a source that you've bought from that you've had issues with, I don't think it hurts to look at an option like that just to have some immune boost. I know that Steph's done some work on some transit stuff. You know, I recently just read the one vitamin C injectable and helping performance. So I think that those are things in our toolbox that we can implement that can have a major impact down the line, especially on cost for some of these guys with these expensive animals, you know.
I mean, you process them anyways, right? And so they're coming in, you're going to process them within the next day or so. It might as well, if there's a suspect of these calves came from a drought area, that, you know, there could be a benefit.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, you, as a scientist, you know, I want to know both sides. Okay, what happens if we give it? What happens if we don't? But they don't have that freedom really to look at it that way, because it's their money and their calves and that's what's counted on. So I don't know if you've heard the same thing. Somebody told me this week that there's a climatologist said that this was going to be the driest year on record, which I really hope not. But I think some of this really needs to be a thought in producers' minds, because it's a small part of what we do, but it impacts a larger part.
It does. And you touched on the cost earlier. And as cost of production increases, guess what falls off sometimes is mineral programs, right? Because they're hard to see a benefit for so many producers. And so yeah, if that's the case, I see this to be a larger and larger issue of these receiving calves coming into the feedlot that are depleted, they're going to have immune response of high stress, et cetera, and what's going to happen to these calves in the future as they, you know, do they fall apart, is there increased sickness, et cetera.
I've started thinking a lot about what does the health of that animal do over the lifetime as a calf, you know? And so even starting at day one, we have such a diverse production system that it starts at the beginning. It's how do we reach those people to let them know that this is something we need to think about, and how do we incentivize them to do it?
That is a big thing, right? And that's a tough one, because sometimes I guess they don't see it as a cost benefit, right? But sooner or later it will be, because of if I bought those calves year in, year out and they don't perform, guess what? I'm discounting those calves very heavily. And sooner or later, that's going to be the issue.
A discounting or not buying, you know, mm-hmm. Reputation is one of the things that you have to account for when you're selling something. So,
well, Remy, to wrap us up here, anything that you want to touch on that we didn't discuss?
Not much, really. I love this industry and I love my job. And I hope that collectively we can, you know, work together to kind of get through some of these tough things, issues, and figure out the research we need and be better for it.
Yeah, definitely academia needs consultants and consultants need academia. And so it is a partnership that definitely is needed to fix some of these issues that we have going on that we're about to be faced with, because it's going to get, you know, more challenging for producers all across the board.
I agree. And it's always fascinating, you know, to hear what academia has to say about certain things. I love going to places like PNC and learning something that you thought was completely opposite of what we now know. Right. I always think that's very interesting. So, I think that working together with them and having those good relationships where you can spitball with an academic that reads a lot more than I do, that it's great to have that relationship.
And the opposite side is you see a lot of things that academia doesn't see.
Yes.
Right. And so many times academia is stuck in academia and other things are happening in the real world. And that's a nice focus to bring to the table is we're seeing this happen. It takes years before academia may see this.
Until it becomes a trend, which hopefully it doesn't. Some of those things don't reach that point, you know?
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
It's time for our famous three.
Is stress affecting your bottom line? Even routine handling, inclement weather, weaning, and dietary changes can significantly lower the rumen pH, causing cortisol levels to spike. Cortisol not only compromises the immune system, but also suppresses normal appetite and feed consumption. The solution? Cattle Active. Increase production and reduce the impacts of stress on your cattle for cents a day. Cattle Active restores the balance naturally. Want to learn more how a feeding program, including Cattle Active, can improve both profits and herd health? Visit us today at proearthanimalhealth.com. Be proactive with Cattle Active.
Well, Remy, to wrap us up, I've got three questions here. And the first one is, what is your go-to beef-related resource? It could be book, website, etc.
I think typically to make sure that I'm doing the right thing and I'm backed by science, I go to the NRC. Majority of the time, or the NASM, you know, what we call it now, the latest update, because if you've really got a question and you're looking for the case study, sometimes Google's not the best place to turn to, obviously. So going back to that science and seeing those rock hard numbers, I think is one of my greatest sources.
Yeah, that's from a nutritionist standpoint, is the NRC or NASM, or whatever you want to call it today. I mean, it's an extremely important resource for us of what we do and how we do it.
I agree. And they have a really nice reference table for ingredients. So that one's pretty handy sometimes, yes. Too.
Yes, they do. All right. Second one is, what is a non-ag book that you highly recommend someone reading?
Like I said, I was really glad that you were going to ask me this question, because I've been sometimes in work, you feel a little bit repetitive. You question yourself, you know, and so these searches, I drive a ton during the months and during the year. So audiobooks are my go-to, and the latest one that I have recommended to possibly every person I've talked to in the past 3 weeks is it's called Let Them by Mel Brooks. And it's kind of it talks about, if you're scared to do things, why? You know, you're afraid of other people's reaction to something you're doing. And the thing is, the mantra is, let them do whatever they're going to do, and then let me do this. So it's been a fascinating read personally to me.
I'm going to have to look that up. So that's one of the for me, why I like asking that question is I learn a lot of what other people are reading or suggesting.
Oh yeah, that's a great. You did great by asking that question to everybody. Yeah.
So, and lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional from someone that isn't?
I think to answer that, you have to define what you think is successful. And personally, what I think is successful is a good. relationship with your producers and working actively to lift the industry. So I think that what I want to do to be successful is to help these producers, them be able to trust me and us work together to make the best solution that we can for each of them.
Yeah.
So I think it's pretty easy, you know, as a livestock industry, we're a lot of people I know in it are family sort of, and those relationships are just better than anything else. Mm-hmm. So
sure. How you responded to that really fits into, if I asked you, you know, what makes a successful consultant?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, right?
I agree. Cause if you've got a question and if it's really time sensitive or if it's a very important question, you want to have people, you know, in your contact book that you can call, that you can trust to give you a good answer, especially to help somebody else out.
Well, that's great. Well, Remy, thank you for taking the time. Really enjoyed talking to you about trace minerals. A lot of the issues that we got, you know, we're facing today with drought and some of those concerns were, you know, the status of these calves are coming into the background in your feedlot. So
thank you. I appreciate it and loved being here. So thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.